Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cried the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's arms, silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance.
Rex, are you talking? Because I can't hear you. And Mika, if you're listening in, did you get Rex on mute?
Well, I was. Hello, my freaky darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Join Neutron tomorrow as the After Midnight Bomber. And then delve into a world of strange magic but incoherent dust and Victoria Frost. Fridays are split between Crawling Into the Darkness with Pam and Break On Through. And join Aphasiana on Saturday morning as part sinner, part saint. And on Mondays, join Victoria for Black Lace Diaries. Now, these shows are designed so that you can color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions, tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues through pen and voice. Pull up a chair, relax, open your minds. I'm Rex. My co-host, Pam Ray, and I can't wait to get into and read your words. And Phil, I'm sorry. Did I confuse the hell out of you?
What did you
Hello,
do
Pam.
To me? Hey, what's going
Phil.
On?
I think
Phil?
I confused the tar out of Phil.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. With that whole, like, real silent thing in the beginning?
No, about what was going on.
Oh, okay. Huh. I have to admit at this point I'm kind of lost, too. But that's okay. That's all right. All right, so how are you doing?
Good. And the silence, I had nothing to do with that because I wasn't silent. I was talking.
Yeah.
Although I did
well,
have to repeat the first half of my comments over.
Right. Well, sorry about that. The storm that went through has, like, knocked out my internet. So basically, I'm your completely almost worthless co-host right now, except for the fact that hopefully I can at least make somewhat charming and intelligent conversation. But yeah, about 2 minutes before the show was going to start, I called up Mika, and I don't know if she's going to call in and join us or if she's just kind of sitting in and watching this, like watching the studio. But I called her. I said, I need the host phone number and the host PIN number, you know, to write them down and be able to call in. And I said, if I don't get on and get Rex unmuted, I need you to do it. So thankfully she was able to do that. And I don't know if she's, like I said, I don't know if she's going to join us. I don't know if she's listening in. But if she is, hopefully she's watching the studio or somebody's watching the studio. And if we have any guests, you know, they can pick them up. As far as I do apologize. I'm hoping my internet comes back soon, but until it does, you're going to have to copy and paste links, or somebody who calls in is going to have to copy and paste links.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You're starting at the top?
We can start at the top, yes. That works for me. I prefer to do the carryovers first, so.
Well, that's where the top is, the carryovers are first.
Okay, then there you go.
All right. I guess I'm going to be doing a lot of reading, aren't I?
You probably will, but tell you what, you read, I'll make an extra long comment, and while I'm making an extra long comment, maybe you say something real quick and speak easy. Like, could use a little help.
All right. You Were Always Right by June Johnson. I woke up with double vision, too much time spent staring into the abyss. I am such a cliche. Shit. This poem isn't supposed to be about Nietzsche, but I can't even follow simple directions. You just wanted to go out for dinner. I think you called it date night. But I started pulling the same shit again, taking handfuls of sleeping pills in the afternoon, washing them down with vodka, fantasizing what would happen if, but you're always home. They would probably just pump my stomach and send me to some psych ward, eating jello with plastic spoons on suicide watch in a hospital. Johnny, who needs that crap? You told me I couldn't keep myself together for over a week. I try not to hear you. For a few days, I cooked you dinner and kept the house clean. I'm actually a good cook, but a shitty poet. Now, it's back to TV dinners and poems scribbled on electric bills. I haven't left the house in weeks or showered in days, but you're used to all that. I hope you leave me, but you never will. And I wish you'd stop trying to save me. The moon gave up on me years ago. It's almost dusk, gray fighting gray, but I wonder who would come to my funeral. I hope it's not that lady down the street with the dogs. Would people send flowers or plant a tree? My obituary, she passed suddenly. Everyone knows what that means. But I know only you and your mother would come. My legacy, empty metaphors and no will. Don't try to kiss me. I just want to sleep. And bump. Yeah.
Great read there, Rex, and great choice for our opening. All right. So I'll go ahead and comment. Obviously, you need somebody who can pick up phones, which hopefully Mika is doing that, and pay attention to late night poets, Rex, because if she's leaving you any messages that somebody has joined us, you want to be able to see that because I can't. And, of course, then you need somebody who's willing to, who gets picked up and can post links for you until I can. But great choice for an opening poem. I like the general message of kind of feeling like you don't live up to people's expectations. I like how it touches on the struggles with mental health. I really thought the opening stanza was wonderful with the whole idea of having that, you know, that kind of that double vision, almost like it gave me the impression of somebody who overthinks things, who overworries. And then, you know, feeling like you're that constant disappointment to people. That's another impression I got there. The interesting, I always find June's metaphors and interesting. And the way she writes in such, it's intelligent, but yet it's down to earth. Like, I always feel like she puts a lot of thoughts into her writes and comes up with some really unique ideas. But then she'll throw something in there like, oh, shit, you know, this is such a cliche. It's almost like sometimes when she writes a poem, she's bringing you along on the ride that's inside her mind. And so you get to be caught up in every little, oh, crap, oh, damn it, there goes another cliche slipping out of my mouth. And, you know, it also kind of has the undertones of a relationship of, you know, the struggles to be a relationship where there's different expectations. And I like the snark that came out in the end stand lines, which, of course, were very quite dark, the whole idea of touching upon, you know, drug use, overdose, and the snarky comment about only you and your mother would show up. And there's something in just the two words, your mother, that makes it feel like there's definitely a struggle with the relationship with the mother-in-law. So I thought it was a very well-done poem, and I enjoyed listening to it. So very cool.
Great comment. She threw Nietzsche in there, which fit on the poem itself. If you stare into the abyss stares back at you. But that wasn't her prompt. Her prompt is, there is but one truly serious philosophical problem, and that is suicide, by Albert Camus. Now, this makes me think, who was that woman who kept trying to kill herself, the poet? Okay, geez, I should know it.
Oh, Sylvia Plath. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, this comes across as Sylvia Plath and Bukowski all in one body and having trouble living with each other. I work with a double vision,
sense.
Too much time. And it hits on that thought with I am such a cliche, and then shit. This poem is supposed to be about Nietzsche, but I can't even follow simple directions. That sounds a lot like Bukowski. And then the thought with the sleeping pills, the vodka, and fantasizing what would happen if there's that Sylvia Plath moment, and then the thoughts through the pumping the stomach. And the thought with the down at the end with only you and your mother kind of walks that same realm of Plath, that knowing that despite things, it would be a lonely vigil because the people who would come would be the ones she doesn't want there to begin with.
I like that. You're right. That's an excellent comment and a great observation about Plath, because I do know that June is really inspired and often mentions Sylvia Plath in her writing. But I know I heard a familiar voice, so I believe it was Mika.
It's me. It was me, yes.
Okay, cool. Hey, I'm so glad you could call in. Thank you for being here.
Hey, guys.
Thank you for your help.
Hey, and we also have area code 646 on the line.
Yeah, that's me, Mark, listening in.
Hey,
Mark, how you doing?
Hey, Mark, welcome.
Hi, Rex. Hi, Pam. Hi, guys. Yeah, I love this poem that you just read. Daphne's going to comment. I'd like to after she does.
Oh, please.
Oh, should I go ahead?
Absolutely.
All righty. All right. Yeah, no, I love this poem. I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, I think you guys got, I agree with all the comments you made and you really got into it. But one thing I love, it's really humorous in the darkest way. Black humor, the blackest of black humor. And, that's the type of humor that really appeals to me for various reasons. And she does it so well, the kind of despairing into the abyss type of humor. And it's the little touches that I love, taking handfuls of sleeping pills in the afternoon. It probably says something about me. I'm washing them down with the vodka. I kind of get a kick out of it. And it's suicidal too, but she kind of understands that, is embracing that and getting a real deep, bearing humor out of that. And she picks it up with, I'm actually a good cook, but a shitty poet. Now it's back to TV dinners and poems scribbled on electric bills. So to me, that's like real despairing, but it's also hysterically funny in a kind of devastating way. And I've done exactly that myself, writing poems on electric bills. So I deeply identify with it, and anybody kind of dealing with depression and things like that, it's going to find a close emotion here, but also, kind of get into the really intelligent humor and the kind of awareness of the situation. I just love the whole thing, really. A great poem.
Great comment, Mark. Thank you very much. All right, Mika, how about you?
Well, I was drawn to that same part. I love that she says, and Mark, you're so right about the dark humor. Sorry. Wait, I gotta find it. I'm actually a good cook, but a shitty poet. Now it's back TV dinners and a poem scribbled on electric bills. I think that it's so prescient because it's not just about how the humor of how she's a good cook, but she neglects it to be a poet. It's like the balance in your life when you try to pour your energy into creative pursuits that aren't lucrative, that you're not good enough at, that there's so many other people that are better in. Everything else in your life slips. And I think that's what speaks to me so much about that section is like, okay, now you're back to eating TV dinners and I'm scribbling poems on electric bills and the poems get you nowhere, but that's all you really long to do. I think it's about how your passions don't always pay off. There's a melancholy to it.
Nice addition, melancholy. Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Mika. Yeah. All right, Pam, where you want to go next?
Well, obviously, I'm pretty much useless in blind, which I hate being the. Oh, you
sorry,
smart
I couldn't
ass.
Resist that. That was easy.
Yeah. You're right. It was. But you know me. I just hate not being able to keep control of things. But, yeah. I'm sorry. I have to say, I really appreciate you and Mika and Mark. But before you have Mika or Mark, whoever you want, move on to the next thing, I do want to say something to Mark. And that is, Mark, I owe you an apology. I had such an excruciating case all day. I just crawled into a dark corner, and I completely dropped the ball when it came to your SoundCloud, so we don't have it tonight. So what I'd like to offer up to you is that we can save that for next week, since it's a performance piece and you worked hard on the recording, and you can put anything on the topic board you want to read for tonight. Or you can read the one that's for tonight's show. It's totally up to you.
Yeah, sure. I could try the piece live. I usually like to do that, in fact, or I could read another. It doesn't matter to me that much. I guess we'll figure it out at some point. I don't care. I mean, I'm fine with not doing anything tonight. So, you know, just working through it, looking at all these other lovely poems. Whatever works.
All right.
Well, okay. How about we start with this? I've got a piece on the board that you can start with a read to Mark. It's Hot Iron Strike by Ted Markstein.
All righty.
Oh, okay. Don't I drop?
Yeah. Hot Iron Strike. We lie and lie and lie, and in each lying gesture, shade of voice, expression of face, and misdirection, always stands revealed, the truth. Thus we are condemned by cruel and inexorable nature, forever without choice. That Faust dwells within us all, as we all dwell within Faust. This joke most cruel, perpetually played upon the greedy and the needy, the unsuspecting and the credulous, the law-abiding, but not so you'd notice so much as to affect their balances in the banks of God or Mammon, and each and every other poor unfortunate without exception. And is it not the foulest of all foulnesses? God, in sheer perversity, has chosen now to die. End of poem.
Great read, Mark. That was the perfect intonation and voice for that ride. Thank you very much.
Sure.
All right. You did a great job with it, and the pace was perfect. Wonderful. Mika, why don't we start with you, please?
Oh, God, I hope I can do this poem justice. I think this is a really cool poem, and it's exceedingly nihilistic. I think maybe nihilistic is the wrong word. Exceedingly fatalistic. Exceedingly dark. From the very beginning, we lie and lie and lie. And in each lying gesture, shade of voice, expression of face, and misdirection always stands reveal the truth. So no matter what face we try to present on ourselves, by our very instinct to present, the truth is revealed. I think that's true. I think that the truth comes out and that the way that people act and the way that they wish you to perceive them actually is very telling of who they are. But then we come to this very nihilistic stanza about, I don't know, just how condemned we are, not only by our own choices, but by who we are indeed, like who we are in our very nature. It reminds me of the philosophy of determinism, that no one actually has any free will and that everything that you do, everything that you are, is determined by the actions of those who came before you. And their actions, in turn, are determined by those who came before them. And so it's all just, kind of like pool balls, the initial hit with the pool cue causes all of the fallout, but no single ball has control over their own movements. I don't know. I feel like it's very philosophically rich. And then the last question with the, is not the foulest of all foulness that God in sheer perversity has chosen now to die. It's like very hard hitting, and it's a cool ending to a poem, but also in context with the determinism in the previous stanzas, I feel like that's, it's very, very dour. It's hard to swallow that now that he set it all in motion, he chooses to go ahead and bow out. It's cruel. It's a cruel poem. I like it.
And that was a great comment. I think everybody else is going to pale in comparison to that. And what I should have offered up to start with was the quote he went on was from Nietzsche, and it was, is man a mistake of God, or is man merely a mistake of God, or is God merely a mistake of man? And that was the impetus of this piece itself. All right, Pam, your turn.
Yeah, I have to say, Mark did an excellent read. And Mika, I really enjoyed listening to you delve into that poem. You know, one of the parts that I particularly, that caught my attention was when it was, and I'm going to paraphrase with a cliche, is that the idea that it rains on both the good and the bad, the rich and the poor. Now, we mistakenly believe oftentimes that, you know, if we're a good person, we'll get nothing but rewards. If we're a bad person, if somebody's a bad person, they'll get nothing but punishment. It just doesn't always work that way. And I'm not obviously quoting the poem line for line because I can't. But there was that kind of, I got that tone from it, that whole idea that we don't have any control. You know, there's the fates, the higher power, whatever it is that's playing games with our lives for their own amusement is the one in control. And there's such a sense of, you know, helplessness within those lines, but also kind of like a sense, I don't know, I also want to put in the word acceptance. I feel like this is a person who has accepted the fact that there is nothing they can do to get the reward they think they deserve, and nothing that can give the punishment that those who have wronged them deserve. But that's just my thoughts, and I think it was a wonderful writing, and it had a very elegant way of wording, so I enjoyed that. Very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. And Mark, you got to read it. How about you?
I thought some great comments on this one, Mika and Pam. I thought Mika was absolutely right in identifying both the fatalism and the nihilism. I see it as kind of a fatalism because of circumstances being forced in the direction of nihilism. You know, it's moving from fatalism to nihilism because of social circumstances. You know, the people who are doing okay are the ones with the elite. You know, their balances in the bank of God or mammon and the power structures, including religion. But the thing is, the bank of God is still around, but God's died, so all the spirituality has died out. It's just this kind of merciless power structure now, is what I saw him saying. That, and beautiful poem. The short lines were so effective in communicating the feeling, and it's hard to write these one or two stress lines that well. Technically, it's a great poem that really delivers the anger and the anger at the lies and communicates the feeling so well. Very strong poem.
Great comment, Mark. Thank you, everyone. you all added some nice touches to this. I think that opening stanza is a great setup. We line, and each line just a shade of voice, expression of face in this direction. Always stands, reveal the truth. That's a nice touch in that, because even in the lie, we understand and know the truth behind the fact that why we lie to begin with. And then he starts off that second one, thus we are condemned by cruel and inexorable nature. Condemned, yes. I'd also point out the fact, thus we are delivered unto that cruel and inexorable nature, because we've made that choice. And the thought with Faust in here was nicely done. Faust dwells within us as we dwell within Faust, and a cruel joke perpetually played. And then he hits on everybody, not just the greedy, the needy, the unsuspecting, everybody, the law-abiding, everyone without exception. And Mark, you pointed out that thought of God being disassembled, so to speak, destroyed, not thought of. There is that great thought in that, but he comes right back around with that ending stanza. And is it not the foulest of all foulnesses that God, in sheer perversity, has chosen now to die? So he comes back right around to offering a question of where is God now that we need him most? So that kind of punctuates the balance of the thought that he's offered here. And still, yeah, we still prey on the thought of God without the reality of actually walking within those shoes ourselves, which is kind of a taut reminder of who and actually we are. Great comments, everybody. Thank you very much. And let me go grab the next one.
Great comment there, Rex. Hey, Rex, do me a small favor.
What?
When we get done with carryovers, the second to last poem we have on the board is one that I chose by Fill My Eyes because I thought it fit just absolutely perfect with one of the quotes that we have. And so if we could, it doesn't have to be right away, but if you could make sure to fit that in, I'd really like to hear that tonight.
All right, we'll do that in the next one after this one.
Okay.
I got A Plan by Thomas B. on the board. All right, Mika, let's get your lovely voice and vocals into the mix here, please.
I would love to give a read to this. Okay, so this is The Plan by Thomas B. We reflect and begin. For all we search, we have discovered much, understood little, and find that learning only increases our awareness of how far we have to go. But then, is this not a gift? For we shall never run out of worlds to conquer. Alexander was at heart a dramatist. We are no more than a reflection acting as a metaphor for wonder. The universe is a house of mirrors, that the reflection's endless. We are needed to record how it evolves. The simplicity of DNA on a grand scale evokes multiple conclusions. And for the universe to hear itself, there must be a way to record its own wonder. We are but a reflection of all that has been made. We'll be filled with unique expressions and a trace of the magnificence entwined in every atom. End poem.
Great read, Mika. Thank you very much. And Thomas took, If God Did Not Exist, It Would Be Necessary to Invent Him, by Voltaire. Mark, why don't we start with you? What'd you think?
I thought it was a great poem, especially for me with my beliefs. You know, I don't dispute the Big Bang and the physics and the atoms, but I think the universe, at the bottom of the universe, is consciousness. I mean, that's more basic than the physics. And this kind of is a really unique take on that the you know, we're artifacts of the conscious universe, and we basically capture what it actually is. We record it, and you know, as a spiritual focus, it's very, very original. I'll have to, you know, I know Tom, and I'll have to think about that. I didn't know this poem though, and I'll have to think about that one. But just the way it looks at humanity, the way it looks at spirituality, and the way it looks at the universe and as us, a reflection, but also the entities that capture the universe, I just think is really interesting the way he presents that, really well done. And it's beautifully written, beautiful lines and flow of thought. It's just a very strong poem.
Excellent. Thank you, Mark. And Pam, how about you?
I really like Tom's writing. He always gives you something to chew on. And the opening part where it talks about how when we start to learn more, to think more, you know, and to open our minds up more, we suddenly realize how far it is we have to go. It's like the intelligent person, the wise person, is not the one who goes around bragging, I know everything. It's that one who just goes, oh, my goodness, there is so much out there in this world, this universe, within the scape of the mind, that I can still learn. And I like the whole idea of kind of being open to a cosmic energy. And I wish I could say more, but I can't, other than I really just always admire and appreciate Tom's writing. So very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Mika, you offered up a great voice for this. What'd you think? Are you mutating?
Yeah, I was mutating. My bad. No, this is really cool. I like the idea, you know, of us being put in the role of the recorder of the wonder. Honestly, there's so many ways that you can find purpose for humanity as a whole, and there's so many ways that you can also discount and say that there is no purpose. And I feel like when you're reading both sides of the coin, it's like you ache the other side of it, is that we do have a purpose. And so I like how hopeful his poem is. And how he backs up his argument, because it's a persuasive poem. It's a poem about how we do have a reason to be here. It is persuasive. His arguments make sense. You know, all of our curiosity, our reflection, our endless need to explore, all of that must have a reason. And when he ties it down to be entwined in every atom, I like that as well. Is that, you know, all of our being is bound to this purpose. And I don't necessarily share the optimistic belief that we do have a purpose. But I think this is an admirable attempt to explain why we do. And it was pretty joyful to read.
Nicely said, Mika. Thank you very much. Yeah, I thought that opening stanza was really cool. We reflect and begin. We should be doing a lot more of that, but there is truth in that opening line. For all we search, we have discovered much, understood little, and find that learning only increases our awareness of how far we have to go. There's a whole lot of truth in that line. The fact that we often thought old dogs can't learn new tricks is a load of BS. It's a little bit of, as you get older, it might be a little bit more difficult, but it doesn't mean you can't take in more and learn from something or learn of something or learn from your mistakes. It just means you might have to apply yourself a little bit more because you are a little older. But then is this not a gift, for we shall never run out of worlds to conquer? That's a great thought too. And that comes from using the mind. And I thought that last line in that opening stanza, Alexander was at heart a dramatist, was a nice touch of humor because of the thought of worlds to conquer. Alexander looking to open up the world to, he had a great thought of opening up the world to everything in its possibilities, because he didn't impose anything on the people of the land he conquered. He left the people in charge. He opened up the sort of religious attitudes, not preaching his own, but offering it and letting them preach on what they reflected on as far as God was. Then the thought that he offers up with reflections rolls through this too from the start. We reflect and begin. we are no more than a reflection. Acting is a metaphor for one other clever line there. And the universe is a house of mirrors. The reflection's endless. And this truth in it, like you said, Megan, this is really good. The argument is sound, and it is a lot of fun to read and imagine the thought that works within. And the thought with the DNA is a nice stroke because deep down, we are built on the DNA that encompasses us, because without that, we wouldn't be who we are, and we wouldn't have the optimal mental capabilities that we do to actually progress the way we do. So, nicely done. Thank you for the read. And we're coming back to you, Pam.
Back to you, smartass.
All right. We got Phil's up on the board now. I guess it's going to be my turn. Lost in the Blues by Fill My Eyes. In a smoky, dim-lit barroom at a table meant for two, she hears the music playing, the piano slow and smooth. Looking out into the darkness, searching for someone to hold, one to ease the emptiness till morning's light unfolds. Hands will meet just for a moment as the saxophone cries out, knowing there's no future, just the feel of here and now. Knowing in her mind, tonight will be the same, just hidden imperfections from some painful, lonely game. Still, she keep on searching, knowing how it all plays out. Nothing lasts forever, and on this you sure can count. Still, she'll keep on searching, though she knows it's of no use, just the heart's illusion as she gets lost in the blues. End poem. All right, Anne, you get that one first.
All right. Well, Phil had reminded me the other day. Yeah, yes, I did. I read that, and I don't know how. I never read it before. I never heard it before. But for the contest we ran for the quotes from the movie Natural Born Killers, one of them was, she suffers from sad sickness, living in a world of ghosts. And Phil had reminded me the other day that I could always go to her page whenever I wanted to. And like an open buffet, so I
think she was just trying to be nice.
Well, you know me, I like taking advantage of nice people. But I have to say, I read this, and as always with Phil's writing, her rhyme and flow is spot on, and I felt like that this fit that quote perfectly, even though it was written to a music prompt, and. It's not as dark, about, like, obviously anybody who's seen that movie knows it's about two people who become serial killers who both go through very abusive childhood, and there's within the female character, there's a kind of a sadness that comes through with her anger, and Phil's character in her poem doesn't come across as being angry, but she comes across as dealing with that same sense of those struggles of life that keep pulling you down, that kind of like search and that hope for love, that kind of love that's going to put all the broken pieces back together, and just turning to alcohol, drugs, you know, drowning your sorrows because and doing the same thing over and over again, despite the fact of knowing how it's turned out. So, like I said, despite being totally different prompts and different tones and the way the characters approach the sadness and the abuse that they went through, there's still a certain, like, connection that I felt between the two. And so I really felt that that this poem was absolutely perfect for that prompt, and very well done.
Well, thank you very much, Pam. And Mark, how about you?
Well, I didn't happen to hear the music to the play this particular prompt as it happened. So I thought the poem was wonderful. It was a real eye-opener, and it's a wonderful poem by a terrific poet. And the music I was hearing was, you know, the deep blues type of jazz, like Miles Davis, who I love, and some of his pieces, and it just captured that so well. You know, the phrasing, the music playing, the piano slow and smooth, and mixed in with the looking out into the darkness, searching for somebody to hold. It's just really strong and really powerful. That the best kind of really bluesy type of jazz is, because that type of jazz is, you know, a painful, lonely game it's expressing, which this poem also expresses, and just kind of a sad but deeply sensual feeling in this poem. Just a lovely, very, very strong poem.
Ooh, I like that thought. Thank you, Mark. All right, Nika, how about you?
I like calling it sensual, especially.
I'm
not mutated this time. Wait, can you hear me for real?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. I like that Mark called this poem sensual. I think that's interesting because there's nothing explicitly sensual about it, and yet he's right that it has that sort of tone. And I like, you know, to me it's like it's interesting that it's a very blue poem. There's a deep blue aura that kind of fills it. But it's not about sadness necessarily. It's not because it's sadness. It's not because that she, you know, she's listening to the blues and feeling completely blue. It's like there's a sort of a detached introspection that's going on within the poem. Knowing in her mind, tonight will be the same, just hidden imperfections for some painful, lonely game. Still, she'll keep on searching, knowing how it all plays out. Nothing lasts forever, and on this you sure can count. So even in the sadness, even in the imperfections that pervade the lonely game, she's holding on to hope. She'll keep on searching it, even in her knowledge that it will play out differently than she expects. So I feel like it's cool that she created a poem that's pervaded by blue and yet didn't make us feel hopeless. There's something very hopeful instead about it. It's a colorful poem. Very, very vibrant.
Very nice. I like that. And thank you for the setup. I like that very much. That you're right. This does have that touch of sensuality in it, and it does kind of hit on that blue note, even with the opening line, in a smoky, dim-lit barroom. You get that essence of blue coming through, as well as the thought with the saxophone. But this has me hitting on something else. It's got an element of the mad redhead in this, the brassy dame at a low point, and just kind of filling in the moment because things haven't worked out in the moment, but she still has that energy and mind and presence that knows, you know what, it might not be right now, but somewhere out there, everything will come up roses because I was laying on my feet. And getting lost in the blues is just a way of filling in the moment right then and there as, hey, you know what, I might be alone right now, but that won't last long, and I can still enjoy myself with the music. All right. Did I put the next one up? Yes, I did. I hope.
Rex, why don't you just have Mark or Mika post links for you?
Well, I've already done
that's
it.
That's what they're there. What's that?
Meanwhile, while everybody's commenting, I'm picking up the next one and dropping it in the room.
Okay, I'm just saying you have help available.
Ooh. Well, I got the Madrigals by Eric Svensson. I think maybe considering what it is, I might have to read this one. All right, Madrigals by Eric Svensson. Mysterious, mystical meanders, unaccompanied and arranged in elaborate counterpoint. Meta, madrigals ensnared in physics. Robust child born of the Renaissance, became bold, boisterous, baroque cad, harbinger, sperm, impregnated present, Aquarian age. Abundant use of contrapuntal limitation. Mysterious, mystical, magical voices meander. Bold Star Trek exploration into mindless voids. Dance Dorothy's yellow brick road, toad-weary studied philosophy and ethics, Roman candle burned cranium, and cannabis at Varsity. Mind, weeded briars, bats, and bell bottoms. 60s flower child, hard rocked, not the 86th love. Ballroom blitz poppers and clandestine gay nightclubs. Ever-present urge, splurge and splash, dance between dawn and dowager dusk, romance the Rosetta stoned under duress. Defied mind physics to become a mater kind of man, divorced Kipling to bed Lorena McKennett, made a night stalker Dante fed bled holy heaven and hotbed hell in Italy. I did not believe because I could not see, though you came to me in the night when the dawn seemed forever lost. You showed me your love in the light of the stars. Evidence still inconclusive. Current foreplay of Aquarian age bodes well. Titillation of long hair and loads of sunshine. The best man adores his inner woman. The sultriest, sexiest woman contains Goliath brawn, but with brains. Madrigals of made to men and women pull down the new heaven matrix onto earth. End poem. And he took metaphysics is a dark ocean without a shore or lighthouse, strewn with many a philosophic wreck by Immanuel Kant. All right, Mika, are you going to tackle this one?
Oh, my Lord, I'm still digesting. I'll try. I don't know if this is, he's kind of like Peter Salway in the way that there's so many references that I feel like could lead somewhere, but they're threads that if you start to pull them, they don't just unravel quickly. So that a lot of times when I read his poetry, I feel like it's just going to take so long for me to like sit and deduce what the hell is going on. What I will say is I love this kind of strange, like lover relationship, this strange sensuality that comes in at the end with the ages. Current foreplay of Aquarian age bodes well, titillation of long hair and loads of sunshine. And then the best man adores his inner woman. The sultriest, sexiest woman contains Goliath brawn, but with brains. So there's this strange kind of turning on its head of the genders. And that seems really strange to follow the kind of historical context that he's giving in the previous stanzas of the poem. I don't know what I'm getting from this. I'm kind of just rambling to myself because I like a lot of elements of this, but I don't know how to look at the big picture yet. I'm still getting there.
Okay. I get that. It is a lot to take in. Thank you, Mika. Mark, how about you?
Yeah, I was listening. Mika opened up a lot of thoughts on that. And, it is a complex and beautiful poem. What I more or less got was he's mixing philosophy and music and physics, which physics used to be a part of philosophy before it split off, you know, in the Renaissance, I guess. I don't know exactly when. And he's just stating all of that as kind of a musical progression, a mental music that starts back in early times and in the Renaissance, which broke from the older medieval through the Baroque, which I think was 16 or 1700s, and going all the way into the present Aquarian age, where things open up into the universe, and just a mental journey evolving consciousness into flower children to the 80s, our present age, really, and all the way into what we have now. And he's kind of dancing, making music out of that whole philosophical evolution is what I captured from the poem, and also from Mika's remarks, and just kind of coming to the present day. And then he goes through all that, and then he opens it up. I did not believe that lovely stanza there. I did not believe because I could not see though you came to me in the night when the dawn seemed forever lost, you showed me your love in the light of the stars. I mean, all this thinking and music has led to a kind of a moment that's magically expressed there in that beautiful, beautiful stanza where he kind of sees where he's at with, his love. And then he gets back into the kind of mental music with, the foreplay of the Aquarian age. And then the summary kind of pulls it all together, his relationship and all his thinking, and says, we all have to reconcile with the various parts of things, the inner woman and the man within the woman and the woman within the man. And by that we'll create a new heaven, our heavenly arrangement. It's a very hopeful poem in the way it ends. Kind of a beautiful musical sequence, very strong poem.
Great comment, Mark. Thank you very much. And Pam, I know this one's you're gonna bite me for this one, aren't you?
Oh my goodness!
Yes,
son of
a bitch. Why do you want me to comment on this?
I am so putting a nut clamp on you, but
asshole. You expect me to comment? I can't even see the damn thing.
But I would actually like to comment, even though I can't say a whole lot. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but was there a line in there that said something about ballroom blitz poppers?
Yep.
Okay, because that really caught my attention. I have to admit, just listening, I did not catch on to the romanticism of the poem. So I'm really glad Mark said something about that instantly that line caught my attention, and the scene from the Rocky Horror Picture Film, and the whole idea of, to me, that gives me the thought of being somewhere where you feel like you don't fit in, but the feeling that humorous awkwardness of that scene came into my mind when I heard that line. And, Eric's writing to me is like doing a puzzle. It's like when you get a puzzle and all the pieces are in front of you and you know they are all meant to go together, but your mind just can't immediately figure out how. And so you kind of have to delve into it and take a little bit of the picture at a time. So as always, impressive writing and very well done. And a quick pitch here. Make sure to check out MK's contest and topic board for Twisted Tuesdays, because the artwork in there is some of, I believe it's either Eric's artwork himself or somebody that he's related to and that he recommended it. But go ahead and when you get a chance after this show, check that out.
Well, that was a shameless plug.
I know.
Well, that kind of tops off the comment then. Nicely said. Well, I've got a thought which kind of morphs a little bit different. I think he's opening up with the thought of Kant himself and wondering how he might perceive how we've progressed since he once opined on the thought that he's offering up here. Because that third stanza, the last line he hits on the thought of, bold Star Trek exploration into mindless voyage. And from everything there down, it hits on the thought of loose ethics and morals, the yellow brick road, cannabis adversity, mind-weeded briars, the 86 love, ballroom blitz poppers, in clandestine gay nightclubs, splurge and surge, romance the Rosetta Stone on the dress. There's such a heavy thought of indulgence and on many levels, not just sexually, but mentally, as far as drug use. So that thought that quoted in the middle that Mark read, I did not believe because I could not see. So you came to me in the night when the dawn seemed forever lost. You showed me love in the light of the stars. I thought that was such an outstanding thought in the middle of this, because it's such a big difference from what was above. Defined mind, physically become a meta kind of man, forced Kipling to bed Lorraine McKennitt, Meta Knight Stalker, Dante Fed Blood, Holy Heaven, and Hotbed Hell in Italy, and then run into that beautiful section right there. And then the last two kind of hit on the thought of an understanding of the Aquarian age. And that last stanza itself is owning up to the best man and the sultuous, sexiest woman are both the same thing if they quantify the other half of themselves. That man, that yin and yang that holds between that part man, part woman, that is the makeup of each and every person on earth. If you quantify that within yourself, then you can pull into that new heaven matrix onto earth, the adoption of self, work past the perverse nature that we dig ourselves into sometimes. Nicely done. I like that. Thank you very much. All right. I've got a nice one by Grant G up on the board. And Mark, would you like to read that for me, please?
All right. I'm looking at the first line. Okay, I'll read it. Nice one. What the fuck did you expect me to do? That motherfucker had a machete, dude. We don't turn a blind eye to shit like that down here, or we'd be the ones gasping and choking on congealed juice. Motherfucker, didn't I tell you how good a person I was? I got your back, dude. Now ain't that good? Nothing like a self-defense murder. No need to hide any body or cut it up into pieces. No alibi required. No comment interview will transpire. It's America, man. An eye for an eye. Kill the fucker or die. Not I. I love lying alive under nighttime sky. Just you and I. End of poem.
Damn. Great read, Mark. Thank you very much.
I'm not an F-word type of guy either. So
you did well with that. The emphasis was just spot on. Thank you very much. Yeah, I was caught a little unexpected on that one too. Pam, this was your prompting for the, what was it, the Natural Born Killers.
Yes. Well, I know. Well, first of all, I have to say great read there, Mark. I know not everybody's comfortable reading swear words, but as far as your tone goes, it's perfect because when you have the F word in a poem, it should speak for itself. Obviously, it shouldn't be overused. It shouldn't be just thrown in just to have it in there and grab attention. But when it fits with the prompt, when it fits with the poem, to me, you know, that's acceptable. And it sets an angry tone, and so therefore, or a disappointed tone, or, you know, you get there's something the person is frustrated with. I really felt like that Grant captured the struggles of anger, and not just, you know, like anger that you feel like you have no control over. I also think he is really good at those short, impactful lines to where he doesn't need to use a lot of flowery language. He says what he needs to say. He captures the essence of a quote very well. And so just an excellent write, great read there, Mark, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Mika, how about you?
I'm so sorry, but I did not hear that poem. I had to step away for a second. Can you skip me on this one?
Okay, no problem. Mark, you got to read it. How about you?
I was actually very happy to read it. It's not something I would usually read aloud, so good for me to get out of myself on something like this. And it was just really strongly stated, kind of beautiful in its deeply angry, but deeply cool way too. It was both very cool and very, very angry. And it's in the end a comment on the system. You know, we're forced into this destructive posture. We better be destructive in certain situations, or there'll be no help. We'll just be put down and put out. And it's a comment on society in the end, very much so. You know, no need to hide any body or cut it up into pieces if you've been set up in a situation and you follow certain types of rules, then the system will let you off. Otherwise, you'll just get hacked to pieces. It's a comment on the system, and in the end, the person, the poet says, you better be able to handle the system, and if you want to survive, and by the way, it's worth it, lying under the nighttime sky and just enjoying life if you're able to defend yourself. Just a very strong poem. Really liked it.
Oh, absolutely. This you're right. This was the title does not belie the voice and the strength, the viscerality that comes with the thought that runs in this. Because it comes out originally up front as self-protection. But then he offers up that thought right in the middle. Nothing like a self-defense murder. No need to hide any body or cut it up into pieces. Boy, that comes right into the serial killer attitudes. Oh, hey, this was cool. I got what I needed. Don't have to hide the body or even be distressed about it because there's no alibi required. And that thought in the last few lines just spit out like that. Not I. I love lying alive under a nighttime sky. Just you and I. There's that thought the mentality of reliving that moment under a nighttime sky and just reveling in the moment, which comes with the serial killer too. So I find that nicely poignant in the moment. Mika, are you ready?
I think Mika had to step away.
I'm here.
Oh, I'm here.
Okay. I didn't read that poem, but I can read the next one. Are you calling on me to read the next one, or are you asking me for a comment?
No. I'm calling you for Iona Cosma, The Rain in the Forest.
Okay, I can give that a read. The Rain in the Forest by Iona Cosma. When did it all become industry? When did it begin to rain, after sorrow or before? An albacore was not thrown in a classroom, wounded by a blonde child's first harrowing cry. When did we become killers? When did we start to die? Was it after the first fall from the asphyxiating sky, or before they told you you were ugly and blue? Your knives flashed the precarious heart valve that fed on Day's prisoner from Mars. She came to your party pristine, mad, and pretty. He was all eyes that were painted on his surreal leather jacket. She'd crossed the Valley of Tears before she learned how to pull a trigger, how to kiss a dead man. He held her hand through all this and after, became a big star in the industry of life's martyrdom. End poem.
Great read, Mika. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what'd you think about that one?
Oh, my goodness. Well, before I comment on the poem, while I'm able to say this, if you happen to get to my poem, and you don't have to get to it, but if you do, I want Mika to read it, please. All right. Now, as far as...
you've been threatened, Mika.
Oh, shit.
this is beautiful. It's so intriguing how, people can write for the same content. I'm guessing she wrote for a different... Which prompt did she write for, did she say?
Hang on a sec. Let's see what's going on the bottom.
I'm just curious.
First prompt.
Number one. Okay. Yeah, I can't remember what that is. But this, I really enjoyed. It's a strange thing. It was like we were talking about this on Victoria's show, me and Afasiana and Victoria, how you read a poem that's so sad and so heartbreaking, but it's beautifully written. So you want to compliment it because the language is elegant. It flows perfectly. And yet your heart is just, you know, pulled, like your gut is just punched at the whole idea of I like the kind of questioning nature of this, like when, at what point in childhood, at what point, you know, in young adulthood, at what point when somebody hurt you or picked on you or not even just picked on, you know, like that constant bullying, that constant just being torn down to the point you no longer feel human, at what point did everything snap? You know, and that's kind of the general thought I get from this. But, yeah, absolutely beautifully written and very well done.
All right, thank you, Pam. And Mark, how about you? Mark, you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm on mute. So what I said was good. So now I have to try to remember what I just said. I'm kidding. No, this is a very interesting poem, very beautiful. And the approach she takes here is basically a long time ago since I saw the film, don't remember it that well, but she's taken the two characters in the film, and she's, you know, basically making them in some way emblematic of much of what all of us go through. These are two people who are murderous serial killers, but they're also, you know, there's a context around this of, you know, society, you know, a destructive society, kind of a sensitive people being, you know, kind of tortured in a way, and being transformed into something else, all in the context of our commoditizing society, you know, to produce it. And it's interesting how, the way she sympathizes with the character in the movie and identifies us all with that, you know, but also notes that the movie is part of the big machine of entertainment and is a moneymaker, is what I got from the last stanza, and kind of interesting the way Holly, it's a deep comment on how Hollywood works among much else. And there's just some lovely lines. She came to your party pristine, mad, and pretty. He was all eyes that were painted on his surreal leather jacket. That's such great poetry. Just a lovely poem, comment on, you know, contemporary life, really, and the big money machine that kind of drives a lot of it. And strong poem.
Thank you, Mark. I like that thought with the money angle in Hollywood that you finished out with. That was excellent. Thank you. And Mika, you got to read it. How about you?
Oh, I thought it was an amazing poem, and I like what Mark, you had to say about it, and also what you had to say about it, Pam. My favorite part was, when did we become killers? When did we start to die? Was it after the first fall from the asphyxiating sky, or before they told you were ugly and blue? It's interesting because we have this first albacore thrown in the classroom, wounded by a blonde child's first harrowing cry, and so, like, there's a sense of, like, not realizing what life is, and then when you realize it, it's from the pain that your peers inflict on you. And when do we become killers? When do we start to die? I like that juxtaposition of you know, being a killer and also starting to die, only happening when others told you you weren't right, you were ugly. And I don't know, I think that really speaks to me of my experience with meeting people after being homeschooled for, like, my first 7 years of school, and then going into high school and realizing that I wasn't special and that no one liked me. I think that I'm maybe putting too much personal interpretation on this poem, but it's, when did we become killers? When did we start to die? was it after the first fall from the succeeding sky, was really reminding me of what it felt like to realize that you weren't cool, that you weren't liked. Nobody really understood you or liked you. And the ugliness that you then turned outward after others told you you were ugly, after others told you you were worthless. So there's this kind of weird, it's not an excuse that she's giving necessarily. It's like a reason behind being unable to offer anything but disgust to those who offer that to you as well.
Mm. Nicely said, Mika. I like that. And yeah, I understand that. That sort of hitting in and not fitting in, it sucks. Because kids in school are cruel as shit. That's their nature. But I guess you and Mark killed it on the comments there. And I guess my thoughts come, he opens up with industry and she finishes with industry, but on two different levels. The industry up top kind of hits on the thought because you've got rain, and you've got the asphyxiating sky. So there's that sort of the killing of land, air, so to speak. That kind of hits in there, but it's used in such a way that it hits on us. And the thought with an apple core turned into clash, and there's that notation to rot in that thought. And I too, that second stanza was really cool. Your knife slashed the precarious heart valve that fed on day's crumbles like a prisoner from Mars. She came to your party pristine, mad, and pretty. He has eyes. He has all eyes that were painted on a surreal leather jacket. I thought that was really a nice touch to actually finding that one individual in the midst of all this madness and mayhem. And then the thought in the next stanza does point out, as Mark said, the thought to the money machine grinding out and how everybody uses that angle to offer up themselves as martyrs or just bleed other people dry. And she crossed the valley of tears before she learned how to pull the trigger, how to kiss a dead man. I thought that was pretty cool too, because it offers up the pain and anguish going through this and the thought of how to pull it. How to pull the trigger and how to kiss a dead man is an understanding that death is just around the corner. All right. I've got Terminal by Thomas B. And Mark, I just had you read the last one, so it's my turn. Terminal by Thomas B.
You want me to read it? Is that what you just said?
I think you read the last one, didn't you? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, you.
I guess.
Yeah, I'll take this.
Yeah,
one.
Okay.
No problem.
Yeah. No, so, sorry, misunderstood.
Oh, no problem, Mark.
Okay.
Someone always has to die. It is all a game. It is constitutional right. We have gone from parlor games to full immersion virtual reality. None of it is real till it's family. The box sent home from the war is a testimony to bravery. Suck it up. It's okay when it's the country. Some of our greatest advances have come from finding a way to make sure someone else's family doesn't keep their son. Now we know the answer. It really is a simple one. Go out. Buy a gun. Shoot up the business that did you wrong. It isn't about the people who died. Life is theater. They fake the walk on the moon. It's about the right to own a gun. Protect yourself. Don't be a wuss. The bigger, the better. And in the end, when it's suicide by cop, why all the fuss? You only go around once in life, and the bigger the explosion in the very end, the longer they will remember you. End poem. Boy, that's dark and dark. Damn. Mark, why don't we start with you? What'd you think?
Yeah, more black humor. It's that time of night, I guess.
No, absolutely.
This is very black, but it's funny. I'll start with the end actually, and work the bigger the explosion in the very end, the longer they will remember you, my friend. I love the rhyme there and the conclusion, and it frames the whole poem really leading up to that end. It's somebody who's so disoriented and so violent and detached from connection is what I got, you know, the full immersion virtual reality, you know, not reality, virtual reality. And basically has become very cynical and disoriented and just noticing how the power structure makes sure certain things happen in certain ways. And then this black humor, the only way out is to assert yourself. And the way to do that is to go out and buy a gun and just take your stand with a gun in your hand. And if that means suicide by cop, that's okay. At least you've done what you needed to, which is this fringe of violence. So it's very black that way, and a very compelling comment, again, as a couple of the other poems tonight, on our contemporary situation and the disorientation it brings and how it causes the natural born killer behavior in some people. Just very strong poem.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Mark. All right, Pam. You're awful quiet back there.
Oh, my goodness. That had quite a bite to it. I have to say, it is one of those poems that brings mixed emotions, because on the one hand, the snark and the bite and the kind of sarcasm that's in there really makes you just nod and smile. And then, you know, the fact that, you know, it's about something that is happening currently in our society, that it seems as if more and more people are lashing out, just the sad condition of school shootings, of not really being able to go anywhere and feel safe, and how quickly, unless we forget, there's probably been, you know, shootings reported that because they didn't, register on a mega scale as being newsworthy, they were quickly forgotten. And so this is a wonderful commentary on that, on society, and something, you know, on another show that Tom and I were talking about is how you can make your point, you know, but do it with a little, dash of humor, or do it in such a way that people feel like you're just telling a story rather than, you know, pounding your thoughts, your opinion into their face. And that's one of the things I appreciate about Tom's poetry. I thought this was a wonderful, thought-provoking write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Megan, how about you?
I loved it. I loved what you had to say about it, Pam, and you too, Mark. It's interesting to read this and think about the way that he's sarcastically justifying the way that people have kind of have made themselves famous with murder at the end. You know, the bigger the explosion, the very end, the longer they will remember you, my friend. I think he's talking, you know, it speaks to me of the serial killers or the killers, the mass killers who go out and buy a gun and shoot up a school or Las Vegas or wherever they're shooting up and hope that their name is remembered. And just the society that, I guess, cultivates that desire, that cultivates and elevates those who perpetrate those acts. I don't know. Now we know the answer. It really is a simple one. Go out, buy a gun, and shoot up the business that did you wrong. Like, there's such an element of bite in that, of what our society really is.
Nicely said, Mika. Thank you very much. I like that, the thought in that second stanza. We have gone from parlor games to full immersion virtual reality. None of it is real till it's family. That is a whole lot of truth in the DePaula games, movies, virtual reality. Now you've got these games that walk you through this, and the movies are even heavier than they ever used to be. And that I too was drawn to that Last Stand because it does ring in a whole lot of thoughtful truth. The bigger the explosion, the very end, the longer they will remember you, my friend. Now that's always been the optimal choice when it came to serial killers. Even they know somewhere down the line they end up getting caught, but they take it with what they've done. The thought is they will be famous because they'll be studied, and they'll be hang out in prison. They'll be the big man on campus, so to speak. The likes of Ed Gein, Ted Bundy, the Atlanta serial killer, the pig farmer in Canada, and the Green River killer. Everybody's got this special name. The media has a big part, and Hollywood has a big part in that too, as far as keeping that mythos alive and in our faces in such a visceral and guttural manner that it's something that tinged minds kind of gravitate to, and they work out their own way to become famous because that's the only way they'll make it to where somebody will notice them, as opposed to being just another being on the planet. Unfortunately. Did I get you a Lady Pam?
What's that?
I got you already, right? You commented already.
Oh, yes.
Oh, cool. Thank you. All right, Mark. I've got Pearl up on the board. What?
I can tell you were obviously paying attention to my comment.
I got lost in the moment. Considering
yes.
You've been, this is the first show we've been on, and I'm pretty much hearing nothing from you, so it's kind of like you're in the background lost. I said, all right, did you actually say something already? I got to ask.
I'm actually talking more on this show than I do on most.
Actually, no, because when you're doing, never mind.
Okay. Go ahead.
Never mind. It's all good.
Okay.
I'm not used to talking this much. That's the issue. So I'm filling in the blanks.
I understand.
Mark, would you read the next one for us, please? It's called Pearl by Blue
Harrison.
Yeah, that's
good. I think the comments are blending together in a nice way tonight. I lose track of what Mika or Pam or you say because it's all kind of woven together at times. So anyway. Pearl, strung out, the pain of needling realities can't find her. Another ruby bead threaded through, stranded because her beauty betrayed her. Made hands desire and mouths moan. Oh, the betting's addiction will condone the train staggering but constant clamping onto her widespread need till she is nothing and everything, the sun barely glimpsed, twatted and swaddled in damp sheets. Daddy's sunflower plucked early, all soft lips and wet stare to pleasure. The demons that rape her of will with candy that strokes her bones closer to skin. Her face growing more ethereal as she bids the crowing cocks bearing sundown. Come in. End of poem.
Another great read. Thank you very much, Mark. Wow. You're nailing it great tonight. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Mika, why don't we start with you?
Oh, my God. What a beautiful poem. This is a really hard one to comment on early. I guess I would say that Daddy's sunflower plucked early, all soft lips and wet stare to pleasure the demons that rape her of will, with candy that strokes her bones closer to skin. I think that speaks so much to what you want to say no to, what you wish to refuse. and what kind of is difficult for you to get over, you know, and this stanza, the candy that strokes her bones closer to skin, I feel like there's such a sense of the impossibility of saying no, that there's such a formidable pleasure in what she knows is wrong for her or bad for her, that she can't say no to it. And I feel that struggle of will. There's a very almost painful sexual undertone to this, but it's not just about sex. It's about what you cannot stop yourself from, the addictions that plague you. That's what I got from it.
Great comment, Mika. Thank you. All right, Pam, how about you?
No, that was the one from Kay Hartlich, right?
No, the one by Blue Harrison.
Blue Harrison. Yes. Okay, I am so sorry. I got both of those. They're such good poetesses that I enjoy their poetry. And for some reason, I recognize the poem, but I got the name mixed up. So I apologize for that. You know, there's definitely a sexuality tone to it, but it's almost more about the use and the abuse. You almost get an undertone of sexual abuse and sexual addiction. It kind of reminds me of the Nine Inch Nails song Closer. It has that kind of vibe to it, but there's such the way she, you know, I have to say that it is such a clever use of the word twatted. Twatted and swaddled was, first of all, the way it kind of had that slight rhyme to it. But at the same time, it was very, very biting in the way there's like almost a commentary on the misuse of sexuality, or not. I don't even know if it's a misuse. It's feeling used. Feeling used and not feeling, accepted for who you are. But as always, Blue Harrison really impresses me, and it's just that poem should be a front page pick.
Nicely said there, Pam. Thank you very much. And Mark, you had you got to read this. How about you? What do you think?
It was a beautiful poem. Extraordinarily beautiful, just the way it's written. I got the addiction. I think the poem leaves its sexual addiction. It looks to me it's kind of mingled in with the drug addiction too, needling reality. She's being abused. She's also addicted to the situation, and the situation might be more complex than just the need for approval or attraction that lets herself be sexually abused. There might be kind of a drug addiction in there with the poem. I think deliberately leaves that slightly ambiguous, the with the pain of the needling realities that she's giving sex in return for for gratification in a way being candy that strokes her bones, which could essentially is addiction. I guess at the deepest level, addictions of different types tend to be the same in terms of the effect on a person, and that's what's happening here. And it's just so she's a victim of the situation of her own behavior in the situation, and she's been being ruthlessly raped and exploited because of who she is. It's just very sad, and it's strange and kind of beautiful that her pain and suffering, her face growing more ethereal as the dawn comes, come in, like, you know, okay, this abuse can keep continuing while I fade away, become more ethereal. It's a deeply beautiful and deeply sad poem. I really liked it.
Great comments, everybody. Thank you very much, Mark. And you're all right. There is a lot of stuff in this. That that section that Nika ran was really gorgeous and pretty hardcore in its meaning. Daddy's sunflower plucked early, all soft lips, wet stare to pleasure. And there's a wonderful thought in there to the abuse, which hits on that. The kneeling realities, Mark, you hit on the thought of drugs, addiction in there, but it's also addiction to using her beauty. Stranded because her beauty betrayed her, made hands desire and mouths moan. So there's that angle too. And I thought that using twatted and swaddled in damp sheets was a nice touch. There's a twatted in that reflection hits on the thought of it refers usually to drunkenness, but in that reference, it kind of hits on that note of being over-medicated too. So laid out afterwards, so to speak. And then the thought, come in, to finish out. It's just the next one coming out down the path to feed her need, whatever that may be. Or maybe it's all three, fulfilling the notes that started her off, the addiction to the drugs, and the fact that she knows this is where she is, and it's what it is. Nicely done there, her Blue. All right. Nika, I got one for you. Please.
I'm ready. All right. Okay.
It's called Tonic Cellar.
Yeah. So this is by Tara Mist Way, and it's called Tonic Cellar. I never was a truth teller. I was like an old west tonic cellar. I told you what you wanted to hear, just so you'd sit down and give me a beer. I suppose you could say I was a snake, but eventually you all left me to bake. I blame it on my good old heritage, but now you've all forced me into hermitage. I was born under the Gemini constellation and quite honestly wish my birth had a cancellation. I really don't see what my purpose is here, except to convince you to give me another beer. I'm like the wet leaf that gets stuck to your rake. I'm the guy always around just for the cake. I wonder if that guy has a concealed carry permit. Maybe if I try to mug him, it will be my final commit. End poem.
Great read, Nika. Thank you very much. A lot of oomph in that last line, too. Pam, why don't we start with you?
Absolutely. I have to agree. First of all, that was an excellent read. And, oh, my goodness, there was a real punch in that last line. And altogether, what I appreciated about this write is how he created the voice of a character that has a raw honesty. You know, that he admits, this is the guy who I am. I am the guy who waits around for the cake. I am the guy who thinks about death. I'm the guy who feels like I have no purpose, and therefore, maybe, just maybe, I'm going to go out with a bang. And then, of course, as a fellow Gemini, I do have to appreciate that. So very cool, right? Very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Mark, how about you?
Yeah, I thought it was a great poem. I loved the way on the technical side, used rhyme. It just flowed so naturally and conversationally for this narration of despair. Somebody sliding on the way down. It reminded me of the male side of the June Johnson's poem at the start, this kind of realization you're on a failing path, and you know, there's nothing, being forced into hermitage and wishing you were dead, that birth had a cancellation, but just still reaching out for the immediate gratification of the beer and the drugs, because that's what the cake, because that's all you really have, and you don't see anything going on, and nothing else is going to happen, and you know, maybe you should just end it all, which is the last two lines of the poem. it's beautifully beautifully written and in a conversational style using the rhyme very skillfully. It's just a great poem in every way. Really liked it.
Oh, I like that thought. Thank you, Mark. All right, Mika, how about you? You got to read it.
I just like the way that she compares herself with an old West tonic seller. I told you what you wanted to hear. Especially being born into the Gemini constellation, being that kind of people pleaser kind of person. I really like that, you know, just talking about, you know, what it takes to commit and how hard it is to overcome your tendency to tell people what they want to hear, to tell people something that they'll easily buy.
Oh, I like that thought. Nice. Thank you. There is offering up that thought, the Gemini constellation, kind of gives birth to the sort of the duality in that. I mean, I was never a truth teller. I'm an old West tonic seller, and I was a snake. But eventually you all left me to beg. So there's that thought that works into this as though, I am who I am, but you all leave me, and there's no understanding as to why, which is in touch to a bit of humor. But and the darkness angle on the back end of this, I wonder if that guy has a concealed carry permit. Maybe if I try to mug him, it will be my final commit. He thinks so highly of himself that he's going to offer up that solution as an end thought. I don't think so. Because, like he says, I'm the guy always around just for the cake. Great comments, everybody. And I got Slither Sort up next. And, okay, I'm going to do this one. Slither Sort by Angel Spring. Look, bitch. You knew I was a snake. Victim card, invalid. Own it for fuck's sake. You wouldn't piggyback a porcupine expecting not to be poked. Same as you wouldn't jump in the ocean, assuming you won't be soaked. Yet here you are again, my venom in sight. Just admit it, bitch. You're dying for my bite. And poem. Well, that's visceral. Pam, would you like to lead us off?
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. I'm glad you chose yourself to read that one. That was just a spot
well,
on.
Well, I thought I'd give Mark the big one at the beginning. I figured, nah, he's
right,
got all the
yeah,
studio
yeah,
on that
yeah.
one. So I think. <this one. laughs>
I know. If you had to read
getting,
that
yeah,
one, too, we'd
to
probably
it.
Lose the guy.
No, I was getting used to it.
Oh, too funny. Too funny. But, yeah, I like how she started out. She wrote to the quote, look, bitch, you knew I was a snake, and then she goes into this great, just excellent rhyme and flow, and there's this biting humor to it, like it fits with the dark tone of the prompt, on or am I talking to myself?
You're talking to yourself.
Okay, good, and I'll continue
we can, we can
do. Oh, I just got so super quiet, there was no, like, little background noises, so I wasn't sure, but that part where it says you wouldn't piggyback a porcupine, there was something about that was so, like, down-home country humor. Like, honestly, even though it was a dark right, that you could just picture Grandma in her rocking chair on the porch going, you wouldn't piggyback a porcupine and not expect to get poked. So I really enjoyed that. Very well done.
Yeah, that's deliverance country humor. All right. How about you, Mark? What do you think?
I just loved it. It was the narrator is a snake, that's for sure. And it's just presented with this horribly funny and plain old horrible kind of presentation. It's a piggyback porcupine. It's like the prompt, it matched the prompt picture in this case particularly well. That guy saying, look, bitch, you knew I was a snake. The poem really lines up with the prompt image here. And you just see that type of person sitting there saying that. And it's just really well written. the rhyme, for example, yet here you are again, my venom in sight, just admit it, bitch, you're dying for my bite. I mean, it's just beautifully written, strong, a nasty character, very vividly and forcibly presented, you know, which is, you know, in entertaining in a Hollywood kind of way, but it's also just plain funny to them. So,
oh, absolutely. Thank you, Mark. Mika, how about you?
Well, I love the title, Slither's Thought. Like, when you put yourself out there looking for a certain result, you shouldn't be surprised when you get what you wish for. If you're looking for a snake, that's what you get. I really like, too, the way that this spoke to the prompt, which I believe was in the Natural Born Killers movie, which is a fable that the Native American man tells his grandson about kind of a derision about the surprise with which a woman who saves a snake, responds when she is bitten by the snake. And he's like, look, bitch, you knew I was a snake. It's kind of an interesting fable because it's so irreverent. But it actually has a lot of wisdom as well. Like, what do you expect if you give an inch, if you give any part of your life to someone that you know is a taker, then why are you expecting anything different? The only person that you can expect to change is yours, according to their nature, according to their history that you know of them. You know, you really can't blame your vulnerability on them.
Absolutely. Great point. It reminds me of that, the moral of the frog and the scorpion. Scorpion convinces the frog to swim him across the river, but you'll stick me with your thing. No, I won't. I just want to cross the river. He finally gets to do it. And halfway across the river, the scorpion stings the frog, and he starts dying. He says, why'd you do that? I'm a scorpion. It's what I do. And that's what this hits on the thought with the you wouldn't piggyback a porcupine, and the thought with the snake. Eventually, you are going to get bit. And it's funny, and it is dark. But it offers up a whole lot of truth, very vividly, very viscerally, and straight-in-your-face truth, as opposed to sugarcoating it. There ain't no sugar on this one.
Absolutely. Oh, y'all had great comments. And guess who has internet 10 minutes before the show is going to end?
Oh, good. You get to read one. Ha! Just in time.
But I'm still just going to have Mika take care of the phone.
And it's a decently long one for you.
Oh, you were just waiting. You were just waiting.
No, because it was already posted, so there.
All right. Well, let me get into all poetry and late night poetry. You know, I have to say that when I posted this contest with these prompts, I was not thinking we'd get so much dark humor, and so it's been really fascinating to me. But I think that's oftentimes how we write about extremely difficult situations, and stuff that we can't necessarily always find a way to express. Wow, look at all those posts. Good night, Mika. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Mika. Thank you.
I really appreciate her. All right. And, oh, good, Nan529. I like her. I'm not as bad as they say by Nan529. And it goes like this. Sitting in his cell with him, two prison guards watching the clock. Outside, the church bell tolls. The cell door opens. The guards stand. Death hangs in the air. Into the cell steps the parson, Bible in his hand. It's time, said a solemn warrant, dressed in a black suit and tie. And they're off. The preacher leads the procession, softly praying for them to hear. George stood shaking as they placed the noose around his neck. Moments later, his body stops kicking as he hangs, swaying in dead silence. Outside, the crowd cheers. Burn in hell, you bastard, as the guard placed the body on the stretcher. One said to the other, and thought him a gentleman, shows you can't tell. He was a rotter, asked them poor brides, he drowned in the bath. He changed his name as he changed his socks, George, John, Henry. He had 8 wives, Bloody Henry the 7th. That's what the papers call them as they carry him out in the courtyard to an empty, unmarked grave, tossing the body in, throwing in a bucket of lime. One said, there you go, Your Majesty. As they walked away, one turned to the other. He said to me, I'm not really as bad as they say I am. I'm actually a really nice person. I wager he told them poor women that. Shaking their heads, they walk away. And Paul.
Great read, Pam. Another bit of dark humor running through this. We got a lot of that tonight. All right, Mark, what do you think?
Yeah, there was humor, but there was just real, you know, it's pretty difficult poem too. You know, the emotional impact is, you know, like Dead Man Walking too. You know, that kind of terrible execution, stood shaking as they placed the noose around his neck, and body stopped kicking. And this, maybe it's the blackest humor of the night. The women, the guy hung, and the guards joking kind of about the, in the crowd about the woman that he tortured. There's just a very deep, shocking pain and a shocking kind of emotion carried through the poem. And yet it's, you know, just reality. This reads like it actually happened. And I guess, you know, apparently it did from the note. This is a real thing that's being kind of factually reported, but it's also pretty terrible and very darkly humorous in a way, and very well written, very, very graphically presented, very strong.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Mark. All right, Pam, you got to read it. Now you actually get to read something to comment. Damn, a twofer.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, first of all, I really like how you can tell with Nan that she has an interest in history. She's always got those attention to detail when she touches on a historical figure. And I just, you know, serial killers, I have to admit, are fascinating. The way that kind of mind works is fascinating. And I like how she took the prompt from the movie, which is obviously a more modern-day movie, and brought it back to a serial killer in a different time, a different place. Even, like, the quote was originally said by the female character, and here she chose a male serial killer. And, you know, I like how you never actually hear the voice of the serial killer in the right. It's all from the perspective of the guards, kind of, like, well, you know, the chat between the two of them, talking about what they've seen, what they've heard. It kind of reminds me, is it Orson Welles or is it somebody else who wrote that short story about the hanging? It reminds me a lot. It has that kind of tone to it.
There is one, the hanging at something Creek.
Is that George Orwell?
Ambrose Spears.
No, that was done, that? A Civil War, a colonel from the Civil War who had been shot. I can't remember his name at the moment. Oh. Well, anyway, he disappeared in the early 1900s out in the desert somewhere.
Hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was said to be the father of the modern mystery or supernatural, because he also wrote about walking into a field and the person disappeared, but he could still hear the voice of that person in the field though he couldn't see him.
Was that Ambrose?
Oh,
Spears,
wow!
That's the guy, Ambrose.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. He was really fascinating. Really fascinating character, and yeah, definitely one of those who set an example for future authors. So, Rex, what was your thoughts on Nam's poem?
Well, actually, this came across to me as a Twilight Zone episode, sitting in a cell, two prison guards, the clock ticking, the bell outside tolls. You got that eerie atmosphere opens, atmosphere that surrounding it. The door opens, the parson steps in with a Bible open, and the long walk starts. And as Mark pointed out, that dead man walking episode, and it walks this whole scene, that second stanza, a moment later, his body stops kicking as he hangs swaying in deadly silence. I had that thought of Ambrose's write about that, the hanging at Something Creek, where he finally drops, but there's a kind of a dream episode, and the rope breaks, but that's not really what happens. This is a reality piece, and the thought with Burn in Hell, You Bastard, that comes from those days when people actually went to hangings just to make sure it was used as almost an entertainment, like the games, the Colosseum in Rome back in the day. Even the kids went to see hangings back in the day. So
They sold tickets.
Yes,
wow.
They did. It was just one of those things you did. It was kind of the community thing. They finally get to see that somebody who is that bad gets put where they should be, which is away from society permanently. But the dark humor that comes with the guards is kind of normal. You hear guards talk this way because a lot of these guys do come across as a nice guy while they're in the joint, because they have to be there. They have to communicate. And then that thought of tossing the body and throwing in a bucket of lime. One said, "There you go, Your Majesty." And that reverts to that newspaper article calling him Bloody Henry VII. So it has got a nice touch of dark humor, but it's relevant to the actuality of the I'm sure Nan did some digging on this and offered up the truth behind the story itself.
I believe you are right. Excellent show tonight, Rex. You did a stellar job.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
It was great having you here, Mark, and Mika. That gave me a little bit of breathing space. So while you guys were calming, I could dig up the next ride. So it actually allowed me some safe space to play. So
Excuse me, what the fuck am I, chopped liver?
Damn. I told you, doing my phone and trying to do this, and this, and bring it back, it don't work so easy. Having the extra two bodies gave me a little bit extra time, so I didn't have to rush and screw it up.
No.
You're right.
Nice to be
appreciated. Nice to have
them here. Anyway, this body is going to say goodnight, guys. Great show.
Good night, Mark.
Thank you
very much. Thanks for being with us.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, great show,
gang.
Rex.
Now that you cursed me out to end the show.
Oh, you know you need to be cursed out occasionally. You're awesome. All right. Well, I'll see you later.
All right. Good night.